Assalamu alaikum.
Malikum salam.
Peace be with you.
How do we say that?
You say malaikum salam.
Malaikum salam.
So I say assalamu alaikum.
Malaikum salam.
Assalamu alaikum.
Malaikum salam.
Très bien. That is the typical greeting for any time and any place in Senegal, as well as much of West Africa and Northern Africa.
And what does it mean?
Peace be with you. And peace be with you. So I often like to tell people, just imagine if every time you met someone, instead of saying just hello or how's it going, you say peace be with you and also with you. What sort of an effect would that have on interpersonal relations? Anyway, welcome. My name is Sarah Groh, and this is my husband, Peter Hansen. This is Variations on the Theme of Accompaniment, ELCA Global Mission in Senegal. Today we will be looking at interfaith walking together in community development. Just a few words of introduction, both of our family, and then a little bit about Senegal. We serve with the ELCA as missionaries and live in the capital city of Dakar, a city of about 4 million people. Our sons, who you've probably seen around this week, are 10 and 7 and go to school there as well. I, in addition to being a missionary, I work with SIT Study Abroad, helping university students and college students from the US who are doing a semester abroad studying the arts and culture of Senegal. We've been there about 6 years and we'll be returning at the end of August or beginning of September. What you've just seen, excuse me, as you came in, with some photos and some information about Senegal from when we were back in the States 2 years ago. And I've put some of those facts up on the whiteboard over there just to be able to refer to during the presentation on community development. But for those who can't see it or just came in, the population of the country is about 12 million people. It's geographically the size of South Dakota, or perhaps Washington. I'm not sure how those two states measure up. The country is 95% Muslim. It is a lay state. It's not a Muslim republic like some of the other countries adjacent to it. And the type of Islam that's practiced in Senegal is Sufi, which is very mystical and a high emphasis on following their particular religious leader, which they call a marabout. 5% of the population then is Christian, predominantly Catholic. In fact, most people just say Catholic. There are 40 different languages that are spoken. The main one spoken by about 80% of the population is Wolof, but you will also hear Pular, which is the language of the Fulani, Serer, Mandinka, Jola, and many, many others. Peter and I have studied Wolof and speak Tutirek a little bit, and Peter has also studied Pular. But the official language, language of business and education and of the government is French, as it was a former French colony having gained its independence in 1960. All right? Any questions just about generally about Senegal before we get started? Feel free to ask questions during the presentation. We've also built some pauses into the PowerPoint slides that will allow for little breaks for discussion and questions. Yes.
So do you speak French?
Yes.
And your boys study French then? Do they learn in French in school?
They are in French school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And just we realize that some of you have been here for the other two presentations. The variations are different. The theme is the same. So some of the introductory stuff obviously will be similar or the same. So bear with us if you've been here once or even twice before. We'll get to some new stuff in a couple of minutes. But for those who haven't been here, because there are also many choices going on in our other presentations, we also want to make sure you at least have the same background in the beginning as we talk about the accompaniment model from the ELCA, and then move on to our second variation for today. I keep doing that, clicking the wrong one. There we go. So as we've said before, for those of you who have been here, this is the theme. Using this musical format, variations on a theme, we have to first lay down the theme before we can vary it. And the theme we're talking about is accompaniment. That's the language, the model that is used by the ELCA to describe how we engage in global mission, how we participate in Missio Dei, the mission of God, God's mission in the world. And it's inspired by a lot of different biblical images, in particular, the Road to Emmaus story, the story from the resurrection narratives of the disciples walking on the road to Emmaus, encountering Jesus as they talk and share the road together, and finally recognizing Jesus in the breaking of the bread. And this model, this way of thinking, this attitude about global mission assumes mutuality, mutual respect, a sharing in relationship, equality in relationships. The way that normally accompaniment is carried out is that companion churches, so in accompaniment, those who are accompanying one another are companions. The companion churches interpret their own vision for mission, and the ELCA, along with other churches, when invited, assist in the implementing of that vision. That's the basic idea of implementation of the accompaniment model in mission work, the global mission work. And this is done in a formal sense, by particularly by church-to-church agreements, letters of memorandums of understanding, or letters of agreement, or other such document titles, between the ELCA and either churches, normally churches that have been planted by the ELCA, founded by missionary activity in a previous generation or two, or three or four, or by churches who have been founded in some other way, who invite the ELCA to work with them or to walk with them in this accompaniment model. Yes, question.
When did this kind or this plan of mission work start or change from the kind that I learned very specifically when I was growing up in Sunday school and very, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. mission work at what point, like 10 years, 20 years, how long have we been doing this?
Good question. Before I answer that, I want to hear when you say the way that I learned. What was, just describe that briefly. What do you mean?
My father was a pastor, and my mm-hmm. mother was very, very interested in mission work. Okay. So she started, wherever we lived, groups like Children of the Reformation and other groups that were, that the church at that time, whatever it was it MLC or the one before that, I forget. But we learned all the different mission fields, mm-hmm. and in fact, my parents had planned to go to China as missionaries, and my dad finished the seminary in 1931, and of course, at that time then, nobody was allowed to go to China, so then he went into home missions here. But we learned these specific countries, what mm-hmm. was going on in Nome, Alaska, what was going on in China, what was going on in Madagascar was another one. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we learned specifically, and the missionary magazine with all the pictures of the missionaries in it, and mm-hmm. we prayed for missionaries, certain missionaries, certain weeks, and this was a strong teaching thing of the church at that time, but my mother was especially interested. Mm-hmm. Now that kind of mission work where we came in and taught Norwegian hymns, whatever else.
Right, right, you're getting at it now.
And that was done, and of course the Norwegian Mission Society was very strong mm-hmm. in India, if I'm not mistaken, and other European churches were too. But that model of bringing our American culture to the people and having them wear American clothes or whatever else needed to be done. When did the church officially move from that model to this model is what I want to know.
Great question, and I'm glad that you were able to kind of unpack that a little bit because you hit on many of the different things. The accompaniment model of mission is something that's been in development for a long time. And since the mid-90s is when it became really the more and more the official paradigm of ELCA global mission work. And even so, I mean, there are, as we're talking about this whole week, variations on that because it's not a ideology. It's not something so firmly set in stone you have to do it this way or that way. But the reason that it came into being were, there are several reasons, touching on some of the comments that you just made. One thing is that because of the success of the prior generations of this missionary activity, going out from places where the church was strong and well implanted to places where the gospel had not been heard, where the church in any form didn't exist, or where it needed to be strengthened. Because that was done so well by the people that you and your mother and their parents prayed for and supported throughout the years, the effect has been that the Church of Christ has been planted in nearly every country in the world, in some way, shape, or form. Not necessarily Lutheran, not necessarily Norwegian, but that the church has been planted in these places, in a lot of different places, because of that great effort. So now that that's the case, and as those churches begin to mature, that they take on the leadership for their own mission and ministry, and that as that happened, and as better understanding of culture, of one another's culture, and that cultures have value in themselves, and that ours isn't better than theirs, it's just different, you know, things like that, that a slow shift in started happening about how is it that we can continue to support the work of the church, but now empower and build the capacities for local leaders to take that on, take on the function and the decision-making about the vision for ministry in that place. And the model that was come up with, it was particularly in conversation between the ELCA and companions in Latin America, where that word of accompaniment, walking together, being companions in the same journey, where that language started getting used and was kind of brought to the ELCA through that particular companionship in Latin America and then shared with the rest of the ELCA Global Mission as a way of, I mean, certainly not a perfect model, but hopefully what we hope is that it's a more faithful model for really saying these brothers and sisters in Christ that have responded to the gospel a generation, two, maybe 100 years ago, are valuable brothers and sisters in Christ that we want to walk with, that we want to encourage, and that we want to help lead in their own context, even as we would want to continue to build up leaders in our own context to be leaders within our church. So that's the basic. There's a lot more that in fact, we have some papers that talk about the accompaniment model in much more detail and the background of that, of DVD as well, from the Executive Director of Global Mission describing some of that. So, was there a hand in the back? Okay. Just a scratch. Okay. Did that more or less answer that?
Yeah, so you'd say in the 90s, had it already started by the time the ELCA was formed, or did it come after about that time?
I think the change has been subtle. I think the change has been little by little, and even probably, you know, what was done in the 50s was different than what was done in the 30s, and what was done in the 60s was different than what was done in the 50s. Things like that has been a progression in the way that you know, dealing with nationalist China versus communist China, dealing with post-war Europe versus pre-war World War II Europe. All that, the context changes. But I think it was in the mid-90s where this particular model was articulated as such, where someone said, let's think about the word accompaniment. Let's think about how that fits together for the way we engage in global mission. And let's start sort of putting some pieces in for how that model is really fleshed out so that we can be intentional about doing things that way so that we don't repeat some of the mistakes of the past that you talked about, you know, teaching them to sing like Norwegians and dress like Americans. I mean, you know, when there's a great musical background in all these different countries that where the church has taken root. Yes?
In Oregon, Washington, there's probably over 8 million people. We're considered the most unchurched states in the Union. Mm-hmm. A substantial percentage
don't identify
with a church or congregation. They may call themselves Christian or not, but
right.
But I'm looking at your statistics up here. Are we saying that 95% of the 12 million people identify themselves as Muslim, mm-hmm. or just 95% of those that are attached to a church are Muslim? Is it 95% of the 12 million? And if so, who are we? What's the mission for? I mean, are we trying to evangelize the Muslims to become Christians? Wouldn't there be some pushback on that?
yeah, the first question, 95% is 95% of the 12 million.
Wow.
And Muslims don't go to church, they go to mosque.
They do practice.
In fact, most Muslims in Senegal and most Christians in Senegal are practicing, are fervent, faithful, to the point where it's a great story if we have time for it. The current president, Abdoulaye Wade, is married to a woman from France. And when he was campaigning for election, people were really curious about her religion. And she said, "I'm a non-practicing Catholic." And for most Senegalese, they just scratched their head and said, "What does that mean? If you're Catholic, you practice. If you don't practice, you're not Catholic anymore." Same with Muslims, same with Protestants, same with anything. You can't. And one friend of ours, colleague of ours, Umar Jallo, said, "That's just great. Now I'm going to start describing myself as a non-practicing athlete." "I'm an athlete. I'm a great runner. I just don't practice anymore." But yeah, it's a very practicing place. Most people, Christian or Muslim, are very active practicing their faith, and that's really encouraged and thought to be normal.
So is evangelism part of what you're about? I mean, who you're evangelizing?
Evangelism is about what we're all about. Whether that leads to conversion is another story, but evangelism in the sense of sharing the gospel, that is what all missionaries, whether the ones sent from the ELCA to other places or who stay in the U.S., are about. And I'm not trying to be a smart aleck about the answer, but I think what we think of as evangelism isn't necessarily urging or striving for someone to be converted from Islam to Christianity. That is something that, as we share the gospel, we hope that the Holy Spirit will assist us in. But we don't go out with an idea of how many we're going to evangelize and convert today and things like that. And in fact, so much of the ministry in Senegal, as we talked about a little bit yesterday and we'll talk about even more so today, has been focused on a holistic ministry of community development with the idea of reaching out to people with Christian love and hoping to meet their human needs as a way of being a light in the world not necessarily with the be-all and end-all being converting people and planting the church. And in fact, where evangelism takes place more and more now, as we'll talk about tomorrow, is within the context of the Lutheran Church of Senegal. That church that exists and is planted and is growing within Senegal, led by Senegalese leaders, that they are most appropriately charged with the mission, with the task of evangelism in that country, and that we, as we can, are there to help them in the implementing of that vision. So when people ask me, "Do you do evangelism?" Yes, every day, hopefully, God willing, every moment that I'm awake, and maybe even in my sleep. When people ask me, "Do you convert a lot of Muslims?" I say, "I never have. Any Muslim I've ever met that's been converted was because of the Holy Spirit." And hopefully I've been a tool for that and not against that. But anyway, just a manner of speaking, perhaps, and to be clear on that. Other questions here before we move on?
I suppose just one. Yeah. I didn't. So 5% Catholic, 95% Muslim. What about indigenous ways of knowing God? Their animist practices and whatnot.
100%.
100%.
Yeah. No, our good friend who you'll see later on says Senegal is 95% Muslim, 5% Catholic or 5% Christian, and 100% animist.
So it's truly so.
Everybody practices those traditional beliefs, and they've been intermingled with Islam, and they've been intermingled with Catholicism, and even with certain Protestant practices. So it's there, and it's really fascinating to see how they've been intermingled.
And I think statistically also, probably a more fair, 95 and 5 is easier to say, but it's probably 93% Muslim and 4% Christian that there are. There is a percentage, a small percentage of people that are neither... that they're purely following a traditional way of knowing God, as you put it, rather than Muslim or Christian. That's probably 2 or 3% of the population that would practice that, strictly speaking. But it's hard to nail that down. Censuses are hard to take everywhere, but in particular in rural areas of Senegal, that would be particularly hard. So, other questions before we go on? Great questions. I'm glad that you're continuing to ask them. So this is the question that we've been posing as we're talking about these variations on accompaniment. And we've already hinted at some of them in our discussions today. If the basis for accompaniment tends to be a church-to-church agreement between a indigenous or a local church, the Senegalese Lutheran Church, for example, and the ELCA, what about a church that was not founded by the ELCA, where it was not planted by missionaries that we sent, that now we're switching changing our relationship with? Or what about a church that we feel a call to accompany, but has not exactly invited us to come and work with them, as is the case in Senegal? We'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. But today's question really about, what about companionship or accompaniment with organizations that are not churches per se? We talked a little bit about this yesterday, for those of you who were there, with the Fulani Christians, who are not quite organized to the point where you would call them an organized and functioning structured church. But today we'll talk even more about an organization that, despite its name, is not a church. And how do we walk with or be in companionship with organizations that are not churches? And so another way of saying, asking all those questions, when it comes to accompaniment, does one size fit all? And our basic premise for the title and the theme of all this is that it doesn't, that one size does not fit all. We need to be open to the varieties that we find in the way that we do mission work in order to be faithful in that mission. And that's just what we're stating here as kind of our thesis statement here. Global mission in Senegal, which is arguably very different from the majority of the ELCA's church-to-church relationships, can help broaden our understanding of both the theory and practice of accompaniment and allow for more variety according to context. So that's just kind of where we're coming from. And just to let you know on this is also, I'm currently working on a Doctor of Ministry degree, and this is my basic thesis that I'm looking at in the classes and research and writing that I'm doing, drawing out these three in particular variations, but also other variations within the theme of accompaniment. So today's variation, the second variation, yesterday we talked about accompaniment of Fulani Christians. Tomorrow we'll talk about accompaniment of the Lutheran Church of Senegal, but today we're going to talk about the accompaniment of a group that is actually known as Service Luthérien pour le Développement au Sénégal, or in English, the Senegal Lutheran Development Services. But before we do that, I want to ask you some questions. Three questions, and we'll take them one by one, but just according to what you know, what you've heard, what you've studied before perhaps, what is sustainable development? Is that a phrase that you're familiar with? What does that mean? Anybody who has some idea about that?
That something is going to last.
Okay.
It's going to be something's, there for a while.
Yep, sustainable. That was certainly in there. Something is going to last. It's going to be there for a while. Great. What else do you hear or see in that phrase? What do you know about that phrase, sustainable development?
It's going to create, in this setting, I would think local leadership. And eventually not require outside funding. I also hear that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Anything else? Yeah.
This is not exactly what you're asking, but now there's certainly some similarity from what you're doing there to what we may be doing in Africa, other African countries, where there's a much larger percentage of Christians, a very large percentage. But that's kind of supporting and partnering with them. And I remember my classmates, some of them went there as professors met theological schools and so forth, various ways. But it's similar, though, isn't it?
Okay,
even though it isn't a formal agreement.
Right, yeah. It is similar. What we're looking at today is maybe different than that, in that the theological professors and things like that work more directly with the church.
Yeah, right.
And this is something that's a development. Development's a tricky word, because in the U.S. it usually means fundraising. Yeah. And outside of the U.S., what it usually means, when you hear people talking about community development or sustainable development, it's often economic development, infrastructure development, healthcare, education, agriculture, things that help the people improve their life. One definition I've heard of development is anytime when you have two separate groups of people or two separate sort of asset bases that come together, that's development. Putting resources from one group of people together with resources from another group of people to help better the lives of people in a particular context. That is development. In the U.S., we have the government-funded agency, the United States Agency for International Development, USAID. Whether that's sustainable or not is a huge question. Many people wouldn't think so. But development means, in that context then, economic infrastructure, education, healthcare, agriculture, and other ways to help build up a local community. And sustainable, as you pointed out here, something that is going to last for a long time, and that will hopefully won't require, after perhaps an initial startup fund, so to speak, a continued sort of dependence on outside donors and outside aid. Something that will have a life of its own, that will be sustained on its own over time. So with that in mind, with that sense of sustainable development, then the second question is, does, and perhaps if so, how does and how does the church engage in sustainable development? Do you know of ways that if we're talking about sustainable development in the sense of community development, economic and infrastructure development, education, healthcare, things like that, how does the church engage in sustainable development, whether in the U.S. or overseas? Can you think of some examples of how the church is active in building up communities?
Could it mean taking what is already there and developing it?
Sure.
In sync with what is intrinsic to that culture, rather than imposing something else on top of what's already there.
Right, that's one of the things that would make it sustainable. Yeah, and appropriate for the context and the culture, that's right. Can you think of some examples of that? Some concrete examples of?
Healthcare,
yeah. Well, there's Lutheran hospitals in certain, there's a Lutheran hospital in La Crosse, Wisconsin. There's a Lutheran hospital in other places. It's where the church is involved or has been involved in building up the community. Someone else?
Water development.
Yeah.
A lot of that going on.
Right, water development. That's been one of the key ways that the church is involved in sustainable development in Africa in particular, but in parts of Asia and Latin America, in the U.S. as well. Other examples of that? Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of wondering to what extent Senegal is beholden to the international financial institutions like the World Bank and the. Are you subject to the constraints of loan obligations that hold back development, like in so many other places in Africa?
Yeah, the government of Senegal has a lot of international debt.
Conditionalities of the IMF, for example, come into play where you have to privatize certain amounts of your infrastructure in order to service those debts.
And that has been true with the government, but not necessarily with the church programs that are working in Senegal, since they don't tend to receive IMF funding for many of their programs. We actually did for one program. But so that plays a role in what things can develop and what things can't.
But not from the church's perspective.
Not from the church's perspective necessarily, yes. Yeah.
This is a little bit off of what you're asking about, but I think one of the key issues is you have to, in some way, establish what the needs are. And so there needs to be some kind of
assessment
of what the community feels that they want and need, rather than what we impose on them in terms of what we think they need. And I think that's true, be it here in the United States or overseas, but particularly overseas, because of the cultural and social differences there that we're not accustomed to.
Right, and I think that gets back to the idea of accompaniment, that the local people know better than we do what their needs are. And we can help identify, help be more specific about those needs, help find solutions, help engage in those things. That's right. And that's, so some of those examples of how the church does that, we've named quite a few already. And we'll look at the particular ones in Senegal here in a second. But that does fit into that accompaniment model then of rather than saying, we think you need a hospital, here's a hospital, we'll build it for you, and then we leave, and maybe that's not what they needed, and there's a hospital that needs a lot of attention and things like that. The third question, and we'll just take briefly on this before we go on to these other things, why does or why doesn't, whatever the case may be, why does or doesn't the church engage in sustainable development? What is the motivation of the church to be involved in community development, in education, in healthcare, in building up of the infrastructure of a country, in the economic development of a particular people. Why is the church engaged in that, if it is?
Well, as Christians, we're concerned about the physical as well as the spiritual, if we want to divide the things up. That's a legitimate, that's part of our mission.
Right, so we're concerned with the physical needs that people have.
Yeah.
And part of our calling, part of our call to witness, is to help meet those needs. And what would be an example of a biblical basis for that, for example? Of the church being involved in
feeding the
things.
Hungry.
Feeding the hungry, yeah.
Trying to eliminate poverty, infant mortality.
Right, all of those things. And a lot of that, for me, comes back to Matthew 25. When did I see you, Lord, hungry and feed you? Well, whenever you did it to the least of my sisters or brothers, you did it to me. Feeding, clothing, visiting those in prison, bringing liberation, things like that. When we look at the particular example of Senegal then, Lutheran Development Services, and I'll get to the name a little bit here because it's what we might call a faith-based community development organization. Now, how you define that is up for a lot of speculation. Based on what faith? It was founded certainly by Lutherans, but it's not only Lutherans who are involved in this. And one of the ways that I've talked about it, when we've talked to groups in the U.S. in particular, to think about the SLDS in a similar way that you would think internationally about the Lutheran World Relief, or maybe locally in the U.S., how you think about Lutheran Social Services. Both of those are founded by Lutherans, funded by Lutherans to a large extent, put into place because of a particular witness or calling to serve in the world, in a local neighborhood, in healthcare in particular, with Lutheran Social Services, in a lot of different development activities with Lutheran World Relief. But the people who work in them aren't necessarily all Lutheran. They're not even necessarily all Christian. Nor are the people who benefit from them, the people who receive this ministry, the people who are involved as participants in it, they're certainly not all Lutheran, and many of them not Christian, because they're not the same as a church congregation. They are things, they are services in the world done by people because of their faith, started by people because of their faith and their commitment, their calling to do that. So in that sense, that's what the Senegal Lutheran Development Services is. And it was founded in 1976 as the EELS, Église Évangélique Luthérienne du Sénégal, which means the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Senegal. Now here's where the confusion begins, and it's confusing even for those who work there. The ELCA and before that ALC missionaries that arrived in the mid-70s in Senegal, when they set up an organization, they had to set up some sort of organization that would be organized and recognized by the government. Although it was an American mission they were setting up, they named it the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Senegal so that if and when a Senegalese Lutheran church were ever planted, it would be easier to transition things, properties especially, but other competencies and programs to that local church. So this was especially because a couple of the missionaries were coming from Cameroon where that transfer was particularly difficult. So this was the setup. What happened though, as the way things evolved, was that a Lutheran church was planted elsewhere in Senegal as a result of Finnish Lutheran activity. So a true Senegalese Lutheran church exists in Senegal, but it's not the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Senegal, which is the ELCA-based mission, which has now become an NGO, a non-governmental organization, recognized by the government and doing development work. The name has stuck because people know it by its name, EELS, or even the church, or the Lutherans, or the Evangelical Lutherans, or something like that. But most of the people who work for it, well, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but it's a little bit confusing, it's a lot of it confusing, actually, as this, what has evolved into a community development organization, has the name of a church. Meanwhile, another church, that is a Lutheran church in Senegal, they just don't use the word evangelical, because we had already taken that, is known and is actually the church in Senegal. Is that confusing? Did I explain it well enough or make it more confusing? Okay. Currently, what's happening then is there's a process of localization. So what has become this community development organization bearing the name of a church is now transferring its competencies to this newly formed organization, the SLDS, So all the programs will continue and will slowly be sort of changed into being under the umbrella of the SLDS, a truly Senegalese organization, rather than being under the umbrella of the EELS, which is actually the ELCA mission in Senegal.
Does this second church that we're talking about, or the first church, mm-hmm. if it was the first church, does it practice accompaniment? Is its model the accompaniment model?
In Global Mission or in other, it's a Senegalese church, so I would say that they probably do.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't sent missionaries anywhere outside of the, okay. Well, that's not true, they sent one to Gambia, but... they are receptive to that model.
The way that they work with other missions or other churches is working together.
Yeah.
And the way they work with the population is alongside, not making them dependent and the way we talked about.
Right, yeah. And that's what we'll talk about. That's a commercial for tomorrow. That's okay. What we're talking about tomorrow at 10:50 is more specifically that church. But you're right, it's a group that's been working in parallel to this organization. And now it's starting to have more, it's no longer parallel, we're intersecting in different ways, in different places, and trading ideas, working together more often. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. So the main programs of the Senegal Lutheran Development Services, one of the main ones is the Community Center Galinan Ndiral. And I was the director, my first call in ELCA was to be the director of this center. So in 2002, I became director of this community center and finished that, so to speak, in January of 2007, when the first Senegalese director was named. This center has also celebrated its 20th anniversary this year. It's been working in the community for 20 years, and 2 years ago expanded the building from this original building here to all of this. That's the construction that was going on a couple of years ago, doubling the building. What's in the building is mostly a school library. Schools in Senegal don't have libraries. This is one of, besides the university, it's the largest library in the country, and one of only 11 private libraries in the entire country. So it's a place where students who are living on the outskirts of Dakar in a community called Yumbel, but also people coming from a long distance around, can have places where their school books that they're required to read to do their homework, that their schools don't have, can come and they can check out these books, they can read them in place or bring them home at certain fees that are paid, but also have a clean and well-lit place to study. Literacy classes have been a keystone of the work of the community center as well, mostly out in the neighborhoods around the center with teachers trained and supported by the center itself. Work on health education, primarily began as an anti-AIDS classes and groups with a peer education model for health education in the communities. Vocational training, particularly with computer work and office work, but also we've had a course in restaurants, be waiters, waitry, some other restaurant management as the tourism builds up in Senegal. And more recently now, a credit union. The women who were in the literacy classes, each of the women were in groups of probably 35 to 40 people. Each of those groups now have the possibility to come to a credit union to get what we call micro loans for certain projects, economic development projects that they might have to help boost their economic standing in the community. And then a sports program. You may have seen the basketball in particular that was being shown in the video as it came in. But a sports program, sports and recreation, basketball, karate, ping pong and foosball, other games and things like that, but mostly basketball. Any of you are from Texas, there's a product of our center that plays for Baylor University, Mamdou Jen, in case you ever watched that. A second big project within the Senegal Lutheran Development Services is education. Public school exists in Senegal. But most schools, most elementary classrooms have between 80 and 100 kids in them. So any of you who are teachers, if you've ever had 80 third graders in the same place, you know that there's a lot more crowd control than education going on. So one of the things that began in 2003 was a preschool, following the French system of a 3-year preschool, what they call the maternal school. And so now what started in our garage with about 7 kids now has its own space and about 50 kids in the 3 different classes. And the demand was so high from the parents in the neighborhood, as the kids finished preschool, there was a high demand for elementary school as well. And so as of this year, the Nanandiral Primary School will be opening in 2008. I forgot to say on the last slide, Gale Nanandiral is in the Pular language, the language of the Fulani people, means the house of mutual understanding. And so now the primary school itself will also be named Mutual Understanding Primary School, opening this fall with 3 classes, each class I think with about 20 students in it, 20 to 25 students. So practically, well, more than doubling the size of the school from preschool to primary school.
Is this in that same building or a different building?
It's a different building. In fact, it's a former missionary homes. It's the houses that Sarah and I lived in with our kids when we first moved to Senegal, and then another house that was also another missionary family that lived in another house about a mile away from the center. So in the same neighborhood, but not in the same building. Another aspect of the development services is primary health care. And this takes place mostly in the northern part of Senegal, north central part of Senegal, around a city called Linguère. For those of you who were there yesterday, that's also where the Fulani Christian community gathers. And in the same villages surrounding Linguère, a primary health care system based on what are called health huts. Basic level of community-based health care, particularly focusing on village pharmacies, so that each village has a basic pharmacy of medications and someone trained as a pharmacist or a assistant to be able to dispense them appropriately, so that people don't have to keep coming into town or going into the bigger cities for the simple things, anti-malarial drugs, or particularly medications, vitamins, and things for pregnant women. Prenatal visits is a big part of that, as well as well baby visits afterwards, maternal child health being the real focus of what these health huts were set up for. And we see in the picture here, this is one of the employees of the SLDS or the ELS, Mariam An, who has been working with our organization for about 20 years and was really the right-hand person to a missionary nurse midwife who was there, set up all the health huts, and now she pretty much administers them, working side by side with the missionary Anne Lange, who's there. Another focus in the last few years has been also through the health huts in the primary health care, people living with AIDS. The AIDS rate in Senegal is low compared to a lot of sub-Saharan Africa. It's an infection rate of about 1.7%, so very low compared to some places in other parts of Africa where 25 or 30% HIV infection rate. But in Linguère, for whatever reason, there's a disproportionately high rate of infection in the Linguère area. So Linguère has been a good target zone for helping and walking with people living with AIDS, particularly in nutrition. Medication, again, to save them the trips into the bigger cities for their medications. And probably the most important, or one of the most important, is the moral support, a real support group for people living with AIDS to find one another and talk about their issues, their life in places that are discreet and supportive for them. Then also in Linguère, I'm never sure if this is clicking. Work with Fulani herds people, veterinarian crossbreeding services to Fulani herdsmen, and dairy project for Fulani women's economic development. I showed this slide yesterday as the typical sort of Fulani herdsman slide, and Sule Ba, a member of the Christian community who's also works for SLDS as a veterinary and agricultural consultant, working with one of the herdsmen here. One of the interesting things, this project is sometimes called the milk project, because what they're trying to do by crossbreeding is to increase milk output for cattle, for the cows that the Fulani have. In Fulani culture, the men own the cows, but the women own the milk. Makes sense. It makes sense in a certain way, if you think about it. But so the women are responsible for milking the cows. And then what they do with that milk is up to them. If the cows then can produce more by crossbreeding, and crossbreeding Holstein bulls with the Zebu cows here has typically in this region meant an increase in output of about 20 times. instead of 1 liter a day, 20 liters a day, for instance. What a woman can do with that milk, in addition to feeding her family, is sell the milk to other people. And there's a part of the project is a processing plant for pasteurizing the milk, packaging the milk, making yogurt, and also butter oil, I think they call it ghee, another cooking product. And the money that's used from that, because it's from the milk, that belongs to the women. And they can use that then for their families, for buying other groceries that the gals can't produce, and for getting their kids to school, paying for medicines. All the things that traditionally fall to the woman in this society can traditionally be paid for because, according to Fulani culture, the women control and own the milk, even though the men own and control the cattle. As many people who deal in sustainable development will tell you, the key to development quite often is empowering women. And empowering women means that you're empowering children, that you're empowering communities and societies in a lot of different places. So a very successful program that has been going on for years, but really restarted about 2 or 3 years ago with in Lingare. People bring in their cows then from the village to a central farm where crossbreeding can take place, and there's a whole controlled aspect of how that's done, and a lot of follow-up on the cows to make sure that they're doing well and adjusting well and things like that. These crossbred cows that have the milk production of the Holstein, but the durability and hardiness of these Zebu breed that's here. It looks like the Brahmins, sometimes they're called. Before I go on to this question, then, I want to just see if there are any particular questions about those four main projects that the SLDS is engaged in.
Yes. Those are related, but we've been hearing about the crisis in many countries with the rapid increase in the cost of food. Is that what is the poverty situation like in Senegal and about the food situation?
Yeah, it is a huge issue right now. It's a huge concern. When we left in end of May or the middle of June, things were really getting coming to a crisis level as far as food prices. Generally speaking, in Senegal, you have a sense that no one's really starving to death. It's not. You certainly see differences, haves and have-nots, but there's a community sense of taking care of one another that people living at or near the poverty line can kind of take care of each other. That communal aspect is still there for the most part, less so in the city as people leave their village setting and come to the city and the supports aren't there. But now in the last 6 to 8 months, well, in the last few years, but particularly in the last 6 to 8 months, most food prices have doubled or tripled. And salaries have not gone up for anyone except government ministers. That's, we'll just let that hang there in the air for a while. For example, I think people are talking about, and I think Pastor Eric talked about this in his sermon on Sunday, for those of you who were here. In Senegal, I don't have the statistics exactly, but my guess is what he was quoting is pretty typical for Senegal too, that many people at this kind of level, that would be most of the country, would be spending more than half of their income on food products. And more, as it gets more and more difficult, if there's a bad harvest or a drought in a certain area, more and more people flock to the city. And then the people, like people who work for us, or like Sule here, who have jobs, absorb more people into their families as because they're the bread earner, you know, the rice earner, whatever, in the family. So lots of people responsible for bigger and bigger families to feed, huger, more expensive food staples, prices, and things like that. The question over here, Tim.
I had a question about dealing with the AIDS issue. You mentioned that there was a disproportionately high incident in the Lingare area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, is that in any way tied, or does there appear to be a tie to the fact that the Fulani are primarily more nomadic in nature?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think no one's nailed that down exactly, but I think that's been a lot of the speculation. Not just nomadic within the region, but going to other countries, and are more likely than many of the ethnic groups to leave the country for a number of months or a year or two at a time, going to Europe, going to North America, especially Europe though, seeking their fortune there. So that has a big part of that. There are villages around Lingare. When we've driven out there with Ann and Willie, the missionaries that we've known there the longest, villages there where there are no adult men between the ages of 18 and 40 or 18 and 60 probably, they're either all in Dakar where they've found a job, or they've emigrated to and are sending money home from Italy and Spain, France, some from the US.
Yeah, if I could just add, because it relates to the economic question that was asked a few minutes ago. 8 out of 10 families in Senegal have someone who's working overseas, whether they'd be legal or illegal. But 8 out of 10 families, usually it's men, sometimes it's women. But I don't know if anyone has heard on the news sometimes, Senegal is kind of renowned now for immigrants who are trying to get to Europe by these pirogues, these long fishing wooden boats that are filled. I mean, they are fishing boats, but now people are making more money for these people who are trying to immigrate to Spain and to Italy, and they'll fill these boats with upwards of 100 people. And of course, it's very dangerous, and there are a lot of people who don't make it. But it's a little bit reflective of the economic situation. Nobody's starving, but enough people are that desperate that they will seek to take a boat and try to flee to a so-called more prosperous economic situation where they can send money back.
And the cost of that voyage, like Sule, who's an employee of the SLDS, so his salary is probably on the high end of average. For an agricultural worker, low compared to agricultural workers who work for the government or for other big name NGOs that are working there. But it would take about 7 to 8 months of his salary, with 7 to 8 months of every penny of his salary, to afford to go on this boat to Spain. That people just would have to save for a long time to try their luck, so to speak, with getting to Spain. And Spain in particular, because the Canary Islands, which are part of Spain, are just off the coast of Africa. It's the closest point in the European Union to the continent of Africa.
So if they get to the islands, they can establish themselves there,
okay, and eventually get onto the mainland as well. Okay. It's just easier once in the Canaries to get to the mainland. But some of the boats are actually going all the way to the mainland.
But it's no guarantee if they get there that they won't be sent home. Yeah. And they oftentimes will have helicopters flying up and down the coast, and it's helicopters from the Spanish and Senegalese governments that are looking for these boats.
So the boats tend to hug the coast on the way up. So, some real desperate feelings around food crisis sort of things. And it just seems to be getting worse, too. Other questions before we have a couple of things there at the end I want to look at, but I want to also take some questions if there are some more. These are the same similar questions we asked yesterday about this particular model, this variation on accompaniment. Normally, the way that the ELCA engages in accompaniment is in church-to-church agreements. And so this begs the question, it seems to me, is this church? Is the SLDS a church? And we're going to have a yes and no. But the yes is in name only. The name of the organization right now is church, but it is not a church. It's not a worshiping group. It's not a group that would see itself as a church. I would say in name only for the yes. On the no side, then, the organization, the SLDS, is organized and recognized as a non-governmental organization, meaning recognized by the Senegalese government, has certain status as an NGO, is able to have tax breaks, for instance, for certain purchases. So benefits from having NGO status in that sense. Most of the personnel in the SLDS are Muslim. Only two that I can think of off the top of my head are members of the Lutheran Church of Senegal. Probably three or four that are Lutherans, two of whom are Fulani Christians, and only one or two, as I'm thinking about it, who are actually members of the Lutheran Church of Senegal. But the vast majority of the personnel for this organization are Muslim. So then the next question, is it accompaniment? I think yes. I think it is, because we are walking in an interfaith setting, walking in the sense of mutual understanding and mutual respect with Muslims and Christians who both, based on their faith, want to reach out to their community and provide for its needs. Walking in an interfaith effort to serve those in need. It's also accompaniment because more and more the leadership and decision making, the structure is being more and more localized. That it is that the tendency now is toward helping the Senegalese, empowering the Senegalese to be more in charge of this organization as well, further accompanying it from the ELCA standpoint, but through the leadership of locals. And as I just said, mutuality and respect, vision, prayer. Every meeting I've been to in the last 4 or 5 years of this organization begins with prayer, and usually ends with prayer as well. Typically, even if the odds or the breakup of the group is maybe there are 11 Muslims and 2 Christians in the group, we'll ask a Muslim to lead a Muslim prayer at the beginning and a Christian to lead a Christian prayer, sometimes the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting. And people are happy to do that. And people kind of expect that in most of the meetings now that we have on a certain level of in the organization. But I think also we need to say that is it accompaniment? There's also the no side of that as well. To a large extent, the programs, as they were set up and as they're structured right now, are still missionary-driven. That the people who are in charge of most of the programs, not all of them, the center now is the exception to that, but most of the other programs of this organization have been designed by and are directed by missionaries. I think that reflects the fact that the way that it was set up and the way that it was structured itself, not being attached to a church, as many of the projects in other parts of the world have been. So in that sense, maybe we're falling short of, or in a variety mode of accompaniment. Again, as we said yesterday with the Fulani Christians, there's not a church-to-church agreement, and there's no official protocol signed. Perhaps when the SLDS is fully recognized by the government, there would be some sort of protocol that could be signed between the ELCA and that group. But at this point, the way that it's been working in the past up to this point is that the SLDS, known as the EELS right now, is kind of the Senegal branch office of the ELCA in Senegal. So it's not really yet up to that sort of speed. And then the question, as of yesterday, the question of the existing Lutheran Church of Senegal, this is also a commercial for tomorrow, how we've been working in parallel and now starting to intersect, but still, in at least with these particular projects, there is no input or direction or work that's being done within these particular projects with the Lutheran Church of Senegal, which, interestingly enough, has its own Department of Community Development, working on other projects, working on literacy in other parts of the country, working on water projects in other parts of the country. Again, looking at going from parallel to intersections, and we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. I guess we're really right up at the time, the ending time, we want to respect that, but I just wonder if there's any sort of final questions or comments people have before we bring it to a close. Yes?
This, Lutheran social service in this country is much like this. I mean, you don't have all Lutherans working there.
Right, exactly.
But it's a mission is there. I mean, it's a work of Christ in these various areas. And that's the important part, isn't it?
I think so. I think so. And I think that's why we're saying that we think it's a variation on accompaniment, not, you know, so out of the box that it's not accompaniment. It's still a witness of the church and of church people.
That's right.
Other questions or comments people have?
Can we come visit you?
Yes, please.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. I've just been there this year.
Right. Sonia and her family were there just after Christmas. This guy is there all the time. This is our son Elijah.
Hi.
He makes a special guest appearance in the last minute of our presentations. See if we're, usually with the words, "Are we done yet?"
Well,
no, we would highly encourage you to come and visit us and to visit Senegal.
Thank you very much for your participation and for your attention. If you would like information on ELC Global Mission, opportunities for service, I have plenty of brochures that I'd love to give out. So, thank you again.